abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Thursday, February 20th, 2014. You are listening to the number one rated libertarian podcast on iTunes. Make sure and subscribe to the program on iTunes or Stitcher so that next month, when I make available a free ebook of transcripts of all the great interviews we did in 2013, you'll know how to get yours. That's a free ebook coming up very soon by popular demand. Give me some transcripts. I'm giving them to you for free. Today we're talking Bitcoin with our old friend Eric Voorhees. We're talking about Bitcoin because lately there's been a lot of news about Bitcoin that hasn't all been positive. And I'm a sort of amateur. Well, I don't think I even qualify as an amateur when it comes to Bitcoin. I'm trying to learn, but I think of myself as a Bitcoin sympathizer. So I wanted to bring on my friend Eric Voorhees to help sort out what's going on. Eric is a longtime Bitcoin entrepreneur. He's been there pretty much from the ground up. And so I'm very glad to welcome him to the program once again. Eric, thanks for coming back on to the Tom Woods Show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I've got a lot of items to talk to you about, and they're mostly negative about Bitcoin over the past month or a couple of months since we spoke last time, and I want to give you a chance to talk to my listeners and explain what's going on and try and make sense of everything. So the first thing I think that has to be talked about, obviously, is what's going on with the Mt. Gox situation. Can you explain what it is and what's happening there?
Yeah, so Mt. Gox was the largest Bitcoin exchange for a long time. It was really the first big Bitcoin exchange in the world and sort of dominated the market. Over the last 9 months, it's sort of been on a slow decline. But they've, for a long time, had withdrawal problems, and mainly these were regarding fiat. So if you had dollars in the exchange and you were trying to send those back to your bank account, it would often take many weeks or even a few months to get those funds. So that was all very obnoxious and annoying, but people put up with it. A lot of it might have been due to various banking problems in Japan where they're located. But more recently, they had withdrawal problems of Bitcoins themselves, and that was a fairly new issue for them. And once this, you know, this started poking up maybe around a month ago, and people started noticing that Bitcoin withdrawals were not coming through properly. And, of course, a Bitcoin withdrawal should be instant, right? That's the whole point of Bitcoin, is that instant payments anywhere in the world. And so as people started noticing this, the story kind of got picked up, and more people got a little nervous, and they're like, well, let me see if I can withdraw. And so they would try it. And ultimately, it created sort of a run on the bank, so to speak, and lots of people were trying to withdraw Bitcoins, and they were just all failing. All the transactions were failing, and people couldn't get their coins out. And what this revealed was that Mt. Gox had been basically vulnerable to a long-known bug, or, well, maybe bug's not the right word, but an issue with the Bitcoin protocol, which causes transactions to be, they can be possibly spoofed if you don't write your wallet software to handle it properly. So apparently Gox had not written their wallet software to handle this properly. And we still don't know many of the details of what's going on behind the scenes there. But as of now, and for the last 7 or 10 days, people have been unable to get their Bitcoins out. So the theories range from, you know, they're totally insolvent and this is the beginning of them just disappearing with everyone's money, to, you know, maybe they lost a bunch of money from a hacking exploit due to this issue, to basically they just had a technical problem and it's taking them a long time to fix it, but it'll get fixed and everyone will get their money back. So we'll have to watch and see what happens. I guess their next announcement is supposed to be tomorrow.
Now, Mt. Gox tried to claim that the problem really was Bitcoin's problem. It was a Bitcoin issue. It was not really their fault. Is that just a smokescreen, you think?
It's definitely, well, of course, there's a little truth to it. So Bitcoin is open source software that is still in beta and is being built by lots of people all over the world. It's certainly not perfect. There are issues with the various implementations, and there are issues with the code, and there are inefficiencies and bugs and all that stuff. In general, it works very well almost all the time, but there are certain things that are known issues that you should take into consideration when you're writing software for Bitcoin. So there was an issue with Bitcoin, I suppose, and Mt. Gox simply wasn't aware of it or didn't write their software to handle it, whereas everyone else seems to have done so. So them blaming Bitcoin doesn't go very far when all the other exchanges have come out of this without problems and are still processing withdrawals. So I don't think people give much credibility to Mt. Gox's argument. I mean, they mainly seem focused on putting blame elsewhere instead of taking responsibility for the fact that this bug has been known about for years, and they just never took action to resolve it.
All right, let's shift gears a bit and talk about this distributed denial of service attack that just over the past week or so, I guess, that hit Bitcoin. And we got some quotations here from Blockchain's chief security officer saying that the attack was massive and concerted, with parallel transactions being executed to create a, quote, fog of confusion. Now, first of all, can you explain, because a distributed denial of service attack, like I had one of those hit my website. So are you able to explain first to people what that is? And then secondly, why is this not something that would make somebody say, look, Bitcoin is just too risky for me to be involved in? I mean, look at what's going on here.
Right. So a standard distributed denial of service attack usually refers to a website that is coming under a huge load of traffic from often botnets or various computers around the world. And the intention is to overload it with so much traffic, so many data requests, that it just can't process them all. And legitimate users get blocked out of the site because the site just can't handle it. So those happen all the time in the world of the internet. This recent denial of service attack on Bitcoin, I'm not sure if I would call it a denial of service attack. It sort of had that effect, but it was more about it was an attack trying to exploit this vulnerability, this issue that was sort of brought to light in the Bitcoin code. A lot of people already knew about it, but this Gox thing popularized it. So I imagine that every hacker around the world is like, hey, I'm going to see which Bitcoin services around the world are vulnerable to this. And so they started creating all sorts of transactions and just going crazy to try to exploit this problem. So it doesn't seem to have affected anyone other than Gox. So I think the important lesson isn't that, you know, Bitcoin is so vulnerable and doesn't respond to these problems and has all these issues and therefore you can't trust it. I think the opposite lesson is actually important. It's that as these problems get discovered, attacks happen on the Bitcoin network, and throughout all the various attacks that have happened over the years, the Bitcoin community pulls together, figures things out, makes the software better, and the Bitcoin afterward is a stronger Bitcoin than the Bitcoin before. So this is sort of the concept of anti-fragility, where every time these incidents happen, Bitcoin as an ecosystem gets stronger than it was prior.
Now, let's just make this clear, this particular attack did not result in anybody actually losing any bitcoins. Is that right?
There, as far as I'm aware, there have not been any reports of services that have lost bitcoins. That doesn't mean that some haven't happened, and it's possible that in some cases where coins were lost, the company or exchange is just going to cover it out of their own pocket, so it might not ever be public. We don't know if Gox lost money from this problem that was happening. They haven't really been very open in their communications. So that's really the big question is, did Mt. Gox lose a bunch of money from this exploit? And we really don't know it. But there have not been like users who have lost their money from various websites. So it seems to have been pretty well handled by people.
All right. Yeah, I was just referring to a quotation from somebody at the Bitcoin Foundation saying, "This is a denial of service attack. Whoever is doing this is not stealing coins, but is succeeding in preventing some transactions from confirming. It's important to note that DOS attacks do not affect people's Bitcoin wallets or funds." So you think maybe are they reassuring people perhaps too much?
It depends. So if you have your Bitcoin stored in your own Bitcoin software on your computer, this attack was totally irrelevant for you. It doesn't do anything. It's not like someone could pull the coins out of your account and you open your computer the next day and you discover the coins are gone.
I see. Okay, I get it.
So people don't need to be worried in that way. However, if you have your coins with an exchange or with an online e-wallet and this bug is allowing the attacker to pull Bitcoins out of that exchange, like, for example, if they're pulling Bitcoins out of Mt. Gox without Mt. Gox understanding that, Mt. Gox might be losing Bitcoins, even though all the user balances would be the same. So then that would put Mt. Gox in a bad situation of having to cover all that loss or, you know, just admit insolvency and disappear. So we have no idea. Mt. Gox may not have lost anything. They may have lost a bunch of money. We really don't know. But one of the important lessons is, as always, if you keep your money with someone else, you are at risk of any vulnerability that someone else has. So, you know, for the convenience you get of keeping your Bitcoins in an e-wallet, you have the risks associated with that e-wallet and that company and all that implies. So Bitcoin users really need to be very careful and responsible with their funds and large amounts of money. They should not be leaving it with people that they don't trust. And certainly Gox has not engendered trust at all over the last few years of its existence.
All right, speaking of the Bitcoin Foundation, tell us about what happened with Charlie Shrem.
I'm not going to comment on that case.
Okay. But there are certain certain fallout from this. Like I read in the New York Times that they're claiming that this is going to lead to greater regulation of firms that are involved with Bitcoin and so on and on. Now, you get this argument all the time, right, that people saying that the governments are going to try to crack down on Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin supporters respond by saying, well, they can try, but good luck trying. But couldn't they nevertheless, though, cause a lot of headaches for Bitcoin exchanges? Couldn't they? I mean, isn't there something that governments could do to gum up the works in that way?
Yeah, and again, here it's very important to understand the difference between the Bitcoin network, the Bitcoin protocol, and actual Bitcoin companies and people using it. The key point with Bitcoin is that because there's no company behind the protocol, the protocol cannot be regulated. So any rules that come down from politicians in whatever jurisdiction, the U.S. or otherwise, there's no person in charge of Bitcoin that can comply with those. So Bitcoin does not care about regulations, and it cannot be regulated. That is not the same as saying that the companies that are involved in various Bitcoin services cannot be regulated. They certainly can. And indeed, you see companies in the U.S. that are involved in Bitcoin are going to have to comply with all the various laws of the U.S. government, or else they risk prosecution. So you have to sort of see it in this kind of dual light, where the protocol can't be regulated and doesn't answer to anyone, but individual companies in whatever jurisdiction they're in will have to.
Eric, I want to run by you a story that appeared in Business Insider, and I'm sorry it's all so negative. You know, like, I'm not doing this on purpose, but I feel like I want to know what a Bitcoin expert like you, you know, how a Bitcoin expert like you responds to some of these news items that a lot of us are reading about. So that's why I want to have you on. You're the best person I know of to deal with all this, and I just want to throw at you everything there is and see what comes back. So there was an article on Business Insider, which I always take with a grain of salt, but the suggestion of the article was that what's going on here is that there's a kind of civil war emerging between the earliest Bitcoin adopters, who tended to be hardcore libertarian in their political views, and now what he's calling a more moneyed wing, that sort of relatively latecomers to Bitcoin who see that there's money to be made here, and what they want above all is respectability. And if that comes at the price of agreeing to various types of regulation, et cetera, then that is a price they are willing to pay. And frankly, they are not interested in and are kind of amused by the sort of anarcho-capitalist libertarian wing of Bitcoin. Have you encountered any of this, and do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, so of course, as Bitcoin grows from a little niche thing carried out by anarchists in their basements to the dominant global financial system that many of us think it's destined to become, it will necessarily start including larger and larger swaths of the population. And that means that, the sort of early ideology of many people who got involved will not be present in the later adopters. So there's nothing strange or unusual about that. Indeed, it should be expected. This is not a currency for libertarians. It is a currency for everyone on the planet. And it is used by all sorts of different types of people for all sorts of different purposes. So, of course, in that context, you're going to have people with differing goals and views trying to use Bitcoin for their own purposes. And often they'll be at odds with each other. And that's fine. I mean, this is part of a decentralized system. Ultimately, the people who don't who want Bitcoin to be regulated, they don't have any magic wand either. They can't make the protocol regulated any more than anyone else can. So also, I think it's important to know that there are people who are much more Machiavellian about these things. They may be very anti-regulation, and they may be very sort of hardcore anarcho-capitalist at heart, but they also know how to play the game, and they know what kind of face they need to put on in order to operate in the kind of world that we live in. So people's motives and intentions are not always clear. But,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I hear you loud and clear. All right. Well, let's turn to maybe something that's a little bit more positive. And that, of course, this is now almost old news now about Overstock.com accepting Bitcoin. And then, are you familiar with a website, Fiverr.com?
Only that they recently started doing some Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah, that's okay. I was going to tell you about that. Okay, yeah, here I was thinking I was going to tell you something you didn't know already. But all right, well, so much
nice
for that.
Try.
But I actually, I've used Fiverr. I've used it repeatedly. It's a neat website. It's Fiverr.com. It's a neat site where people offer all kinds of interesting services in $5 units. For $5, I'll do some crazy thing, or I'll transcribe 10 minutes of audio or whatever. It is an extremely valuable website. I absolutely love it. I've used it for all kinds of neat things. I had all kinds of people all over the world wishing my wife a Merry Christmas in the most bizarre ways imaginable. I paid a guy $5 to eat his way through a watermelon, and in the center of it was a Merry Christmas note to my wife. That cost me $5. I would love to be able to use Bitcoin for that. I got these Bitcoins. I'd like to use them for that. But now, a company like, I can't speak for Fiverr, but a company like Overstock, the CEO has made clear that they don't want to be in Bitcoin. They don't want to hold on to the Bitcoins. They want to cash them out into cash. So then this raises the question that a lot of critics have raised. Is Bitcoin then being used as money when, in fact, the people on the other end of the transaction want to get out of it right away?
So first of all, with Overstock, they've actually come back and said that they're getting interested in actually keeping some of it in Bitcoin.
Oh,
but
okay.
Let's ignore that for now, because certainly it's true that most companies will not want to keep their Bitcoin revenue in Bitcoin. And that's completely understandable, right? Because the currency is so volatile, it can go down 20% in a day. And it would be imprudent for a company that wants to accept Bitcoin and just handle its accounting normally to be taking on that exchange rate risk. So to the extent that companies are just cashing out Bitcoin into normal money, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just using Bitcoin as a payment network instead of as a currency itself. Bitcoin is both things. It is the currency units and it is the payment network, and the currency units ultimately get their value from the payment network itself. So there are some, I guess, purists who think that it's wrong or sacrilegious to be cashing out your Bitcoins for dollars. I think that's nonsense. I think however people find to use this technology in a useful and productive way, they should do it. And you'll start to see, maybe it will take a number of years, as the Bitcoin price stabilizes, which it will at some point, as it stabilizes, people will feel more and more comfortable holding at the margin some portion of their their earnings in Bitcoin. And this comes from the stability. This comes from when they realize there's other places they can spend it directly. But that's not something that happens right away. This is a spontaneous market-based process that is ugly and it has ups and downs and mistakes and problems and all sorts of, you know, roundabout ways of getting to its goal. But we'll see it come to that over the years.
Eric, you are, of course, very plugged into the Bitcoin community. So can you tell us what how people's spirits have been over the past month? I mean, we've had the Charlie Shrem arrest. We've had the Mt. Gox situation. We've had that, whether we want to call it a denial of service attack or whatever, we had that go on. We've had items like this and then this, you know, alleged civil war going on with Bitcoin. Have people thought, well, this was really kind of a bad month for Bitcoin? Or are people thinking, you know, the mainstream media is just missing it? They're being distracted by issues that in the long run are just not going to matter.
Yeah, ultimately there's lots of noise in Bitcoin. And both individual people and the press love a salacious story or something that will just get people excited or interested, you know, for various reasons. When Bitcoin price is going up, people tend to be optimistic and positive and everyone's glowing about it. And when the price has been going down, people spout doom and gloom and all this stuff. It, you know, you can go in the Bitcoin Reddit forum and watch. You can tell, like, who's new and who's been around a while, because the new people,
they're all
when
panicked.
The price is going up, they're just euphoric. And they just think, wow, this is amazing. And when things go sour for a little while, they completely turn around and they get all depressed and everything. And it's just like, it just seems very childish. And it's something that I've come to kind of not enjoy dealing with every time that there's a downtrend. You know, this stuff is going to be volatile. Volatile means up and down and crazy movements in price and sentiment all the time. And in certainly different sentiment in different places around the world. So what might be going well in the U.S. for a while is not necessarily going well in China or something. So this is going to be a bumpy ride, and people who are interested in this technology have to really just get the stomach for it and grow up and put their big boy pants on and deal with it.
Eric, is there a central place on the internet where somebody can find out Bitcoin-related news on a daily basis? Is there one kind of center that everybody goes to?
If you want, like, written article news, the best source is Coindesk.com. They're just getting better and better. I mean, they put out a few pieces every day now about various things that are relevant in Bitcoin. So that's, like, written articles. The Reddit forum, reddit.com/r/Bitcoin, is probably the biggest community and the most active. So if you just want news all the time, real quick, some of it, you know, worthless, some of it valuable, that's kind of the place to hang out. So between those two places, if you observe them, you'll probably have a good idea of what's going on.
And finally, Eric, let me take the last minute or two to turn it over to you to say anything you want to say to the listeners out there, including for those who are curious about Bitcoin and want to know how to get started, what you would advise them to do.
Well, for anyone who's still curious about Bitcoin, I mean, all you can do is just start learning about it. Don't put money in that you can't lose. Understand how risky and crazy this stuff is, but also understand how if it works, it will absolutely change the world. And it's probably a good idea to at least understand what this is. So just educate yourself, spend an afternoon learning about it, and you'll probably get hooked and fall down the rabbit hole.
You know, Eric, I don't want people to think that, you know, I'm not promoting you adequately. I always promote the guests and I direct people to websites and books that they've done. But I know that you just want to represent sort of yourself and not any affiliation you have with anything. If there's anything you want me to plug, I'll do it. Otherwise, we'll say goodbye until next time.
I think we should be good. Just, you know, rather not promote anything right now. Just happy to be on the show and talking with you.
And we'll try and link to your Twitter account in the show notes so people can follow you if they want to get some interesting tweets from time to time. So I appreciate your time. I mean, as I say, I accumulated all these stories. I wanted to have you on to just sort them all out for, you know, an amateur like me to try to understand what's happening, and I appreciate your doing it. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody, a couple quick announcements. First, make sure and follow Eric at Eric Voorhees. So that's on Twitter. That's E-R-I-K-V-O-O-R-H-E-E-S, at Eric Voorhees. That's him on Twitter. If you enjoy this program, we accept donations in Bitcoin at TomWoodsRadio.com. And if you want to learn real history and economics without all the pro-government propaganda, you can do so in courses you can download and listen to in your car that are taught by me and by people I trust over at LibertyClassroom.com. And you can pay in Bitcoin. How about that? At LibertyClassroom.com. Tomorrow, you guys are in for a treat. One of my favorite writers of all time will join us, Bill Kaufman. If you don't know Bill, as I say, you're in for an incredible treat. He is such a great guy to listen to and talk to. And of course, even if you do know Bill, you're also in for a treat. So join us then. Make sure you subscribe to the show. Don't miss an episode. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.